even black civil rights advocates, such as Van Jones, President Barack Obama's former green jobs czar, confirmed these findings in his October 5th, 2005 article. He wrote, "Are blacks a criminal race?" Van Jones wrote, "African-American youth represent 32% of all weapons arrests and were arrested for aggravated assault at a rate nearly three times that of whites." Oh, and those are the good statistics. And they're far more prone than that to commit murder. Far more prone to commit armed robbery. So, far more prone to commit rape than the aggravated assault numbers. When Daniel Patrick Monaghan zeroed in on the disintegration of the nuclear family as the root cause of African-American poverty and crime in the mid-1960s, the out-of-wedlock birth rate for black Africans was at 25%. This is really an important indicator. And it's been societally engineered, folks. The welfare dependency mindset, food stamps, housing subsidies, and welfare created an economic incentive for African Americans to get pregnant and to bear children because they got more money. And it had nothing to do with love or marriage or family. There was a overall decay in the way they were raised. And I think the black church plays a big part of this. You know, it's a huge segregated religion, in the, particularly in the South of America, that the African-American churches had a huge influence. But so did societal engineering, where they were presented as victims. And then they were turned into dependents. And what you had is generation of generation, nobody working. There was no example in the home as to what a man ought to do. What is appropriate of a mother, of a father, of a husband, of a wife? What are marriage vows? What is work like? What is it like to show up? You know, this idea that you can walk along with your hoodie up and your pants down and think that you're going to appeal to somebody and get a job, it's nonsense. You know, if you're not going to apply yourself at the opportunity you have in school, then you're not going to get ahead. You know, it has a lot to do with the way that you're raised. And if you're raised and as a dependent of the state, outside of a family with a mother and father, each of which are establishing an example for you to follow, helping to lift you up and teach you, your likelihood of succeeding is really low. You know, when Yahweh said that fathers corrupt their own children to the third and fourth generation, he was right. The men who are sperm donors in this case are corrupting their offspring. Now today, after the civil rights revolution culminating with the election, of course, of the first black president and $15 trillion squandered on the war on poverty, the official poverty rate hasn't changed one iota. Redistributing wealth does not take people out of poverty. It creates dependence. It breaks their character, destroys character, destroys ambition. So $15 trillion taken away from those who were productive to give to those who are not productive didn't increase the number of those who are productive. Official poverty rate hasn't changed one iota. And now 70% of black babies are born outside of marriage. 70%. Now, it's really high in the white arena as well. really high. I mean, I think it's over 50%, but over 70%. You know, it was created man to create families. He knew that men and women with their unique proclivities and abilities, they, coming together in love to become one in marriage, to build homes, to conceive children, and to raise them in a loving and nurturing environment, gave the single best opportunity for their offspring to prevail, for their offspring to succeed, for them to be moral, for them to be wise, for them to be productive, for them to create value and to have value. It's still true. That's how we were conceived. That's why the covenant is front and center in the Torah. That's why it is the single most important thing to Yahweh. But man has corrupted that, where marriage is no longer between just a man and a woman, and most children are conceived outside of marriage. The world has totally corrupted the model that Yahweh envisioned for us, that he designed us to benefit from. And the result is the chaos that we're witnessing today. The injustice being perpetrated on one another. Consequently, unemployment and poverty remain far higher for blacks than for the rest of Americans. You know, if you don't have an example in the home of what it's like to sacrifice to work, then what chance do you have of exhibiting the right kind of behavior? I mean, there's something special about a man that says, you know, I am married. I have responsibility to my children, to my wife, to my home. And women, you know, I understand that today it's everybody works. You know, men and women both work. And very few women work at home now. They, you know, have jobs too. So I understand that we've changed society in this regard. But my father and I did not get along. But one thing that my father instilled was a devotion to his job. He was devoted to it. He got up early in the morning, never slept in late. And he worked. And he worked late hours. There was no 9 to 5. There was no taking long breaks. There was no skipping off. He was devoted to it. He prepared. He worked. He did his follow-up. He didn't take shortcuts. He knew it was an example. 6 days a week, man, he worked. And he prepared himself to succeed. He willed himself to succeed. That example doesn't exist in these homes. Consequently, as a result of unemployment and poverty being far higher for blacks than the rest of Americans, the elephant living in the room that no one in the public eye seems interested in addressing is the appalling levels of crime committed by young African-American males. Now, one reason that the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin affair garnered so much attention was the unusual nature of a white man, his case, Hispanic, allegedly accosting a black teen. Sadly, when it comes to interracial crime, the reverse is anything but rare. Now, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, non-Hispanic blacks accounted for 40% of the prison population in the country. Three times more likely to be in jail. And whites, 34%, Hispanics here, 20%. So whites are underrepresented in jail. And Hispanics are slightly overrepresented, and blacks are hugely overrepresented, three times. The incarceration rate of blacks was six times higher than that of white males, with a rate of 4,749 per 100,000 residents. Hispanics constituted, I should say. I don't know why that word was hard for me to read this morning. Hispanic constituted 16.3% of the U.S. population, according to the U.S. Statistics. So 16% of the U.S. population, representing 21% of the incarcerated population. So it's not good. That's a bad trend. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the black incarceration rate in state and federal prisons actually declined here recently to 3,200 per 100,000, and the white incarceration rate actually rose slightly to 487 per 100,000. But let's just round the one up and the other down. 500 per 100,000 in the case of whites, 3,000 per 100,000 in the case of blacks. That's 6 to 1. 6 times. 700%. Blacks are 700% more likely to go to prison than are whites. They don't send tickets to prison for doing nothing. Now, it's true that if you want to take things out of context, that a 2012 University of Michigan Law School study found that African Americans are given very slightly longer federal sentences, shorter state sentences, but longer federal sentences when factoring in their criminal records, and that the African American jail sentence federally is 9 or 10% longer than the white sentence for the same crime. State courts, the opposite is true. They offset each other, particularly recognizing that there are more state convictions than there are federal convictions. But that is only half of the story. In the mid-1990s, the Center for Equal Opportunity analyzed 55,000 felony cases filed in state courts for the 75 largest communities, representing 37% of the U.S. population. The weighted data taken from the Bureau of Justice revealed that juries actually acquit blacks at a significantly higher rate than whites for 12 of the 14 crimes studied. So here's the reality. I know that America doesn't like reality anymore. It's not fond of the truth. It much prefers the feel-good lies, like the Islamic State's not Islamic. It much prefers the notion that jihadists have corrupted their religion, even though it is untrue. Now, Obama wants to convey that people feel and people experience the justice system differently, and that somehow there's a justice gap and that the blacks are treated unfairly. Well, here's reality. Of 55,512 felony cases filed in state courts for the 75 largest counties in America, representing 37% of the U.S. population, throughout the mid-90s, the weighted data taken from the Bureau of Justice Statistics revealed that juries actually acquit blacks at a higher rate than whites for 12 of the 14 types of crimes studied, including murder, rape, armed robbery, and assault, the four big ones. The only category that had a higher conviction rate for African Americans were traffic offenses. That's fact. You can put that in your pipe and smoke it. You can put that in your mind and process it. That's a fact. African Americans are more likely to be acquitted by a jury than convicted by a jury compared to their counterparts who are white. So rather than this myth that the reason that the black prison population is 400% per capita greater than it is for whites is because juries acquit whites and incarcerate blacks, it's factually untrue. Juries are more likely to acquit the black of the same crime and incarcerate the white. Those are the facts. Now, you think that the President of the United States is just stupid and he doesn't know this, and therefore he is misleading the American people out of his own personal prejudice and injustice? Or does he know the truth? And he's deliberately lying. I went to the Department of Justice site this morning when I saw the president make these stupid statements. And so I didn't want to get somebody else's take on it. I went to the site myself. And look at the U.S. Department of Justice crime rates for the last 20 years. And here's reality, folks. If you combine Hispanics into the white population, if you disassociate them, these numbers are far worse on behalf of blacks. But if you include Hispanics as part of the white population, as the Department of Justice does, then here are the numbers. And as I say, if they were disjoined, the numbers are far more egregious on behalf of the African American community. Blacks are 500% more likely to commit murder than are whites. Blacks are 500%, four times, more likely to commit murder than are whites. Blacks, as a percentage of the population, commit three times more rapes. A black man is 400% more likely to commit rape than a white man. Now, when you're dealing with something that if it were 20% more likely, that would be significant. That would be a real concern. 50% would be a tragic in terms of one racial group being 50% more likely to do something heinous, like commit murder or rape. That would be tragic. That would be something of genuine concern that we ought to figure out. Why is one racial group 50% more likely to commit rape or murder than another? We ought, even at 50%, we ought to invest the time to talk about it and to study it and to try to resolve it. But we're not talking about 25%. We're not talking about 50%. We're talking about 500% and 400%. With armed robberies, it's 600%. The mentality is that I can walk into a store with a gun and I can take what is yours. 600% and 400% more on assaults. Overwhelming. Folks, those are alarming statistics. Those are not opinions. It's not a racial statement, a racist statement. Those are alarming, horrifying numbers. The President of the United States ought to have been addressing the horror of those numbers. Not the perceptions, not the feelings, not the justice gap, because there's not a justice gap. It's the criminal gap. It's the mindset in the African-American community that is causing blacks who are disproportionately dependents of the government. States have supplied housing, food stamps, welfare, all sorts of Head Start programs, but who are overwhelmingly without fathers in the homes or witnesses to a husband and wife living together and working together. That they commit 500% more murders, 400% more rapes, 600% more armed robberies per capita than do whites. And the propensity of whites to commit these crimes is alarmingly high. I mean, this is a tragedy, folks. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, blacks accounted for 53% of homicide offenders. So homicide offenders, 53% from 1980 to 2008, over those 28 years, represent 12% of the population. It's over four times more likely, with whites 45.3% and Native Americans and Asians at 2.2%. The offending rate for blacks was almost eight times higher than whites. And the victim rate, so as an offender, blacks are eight times more likely overall on violent crimes to be a perpetrator than whites. And they are six times more likely to be a victim, which means that blacks are attacking other blacks, and gangbanging in particular. Most murders were intra-racial, with 84% of white homicide victims murdered by whites, and 93% of black homicide victims murdered by blacks. So when you see the anomaly of what took place in Ferguson, you should never speak of Ferguson as evidence of anything, as the president did in his address to the United Nations and his address to the Black Caucus. When you emphasize that, as blacks have done, you're grotesquely misleading, folks. Grotesquely misleading. 93% of homicides where blacks are murdered are perpetrated by blacks. 93%. And a black person is eight times more likely to murder a white individual than a white individual is to murder a black individual. And those are the facts. If your presumptions, if your opinions are out of sync with the facts, maybe what you need is to change your position. Glenn, you have a comment on these numbers? Because I find breathtaking.
Well, yeah, then, and this is something that's been decried for a long time. You know, I wish I could find the information. It's been a number, a few years now, but here on the East Coast, comparatively close to Trenton, there was a black legislator. I don't recall if he was a state legislator or with the national Congress, but who was working, who considered this, deliberate dependency of blacks on the social safety net and entitlement programs to be sort of a war on the black culture and this idea of women not having men in the home. And this is a black legislator who is actively opposing this and trying to persuade blacks not to be so dependent standing up to this. And I wish I lost track of this of the man. I thought it took tremendous courage for a black man in the state house in Trenton to stand up and expose this.
This idea that you're being compassionate when you give entitlements to people who have not earned them, when you give them money, when you give them food, when you give them housing, it's one thing if you are, through no fault of your own, you've had a turn of bad fortune. People have treated you poorly, and you're out on the streets. By golly, we ought to have places where those who are lose their homes, lose their jobs, have a warm, dry place to stay. And if they're married together and if they have families together, it ought to not be extravagant, but it ought to be a decent place to stay together. And that so long as that individual was willing to contribute some effort to the maintaining of that facility, laundry, that sort of thing, then they ought to be able to stay there while they're down on their luck, because that can happen. And if somebody has done their best to get a job, can't get a job, lost their job, I don't see a problem in making sure that there is a place to stay and there are nourishing meals to eat that are provided. And I don't even have a problem saying, why don't we go one step further and there's so much clothes that are discarded. Let's make sure that they're reasonably dressed. And let's make sure we're taking care of the children. I've got no issue with that. Now, when you do it with money and you give people money and you reward people with unemployment benefits and welfare and food stamps and that sort of thing, I got a real problem with that. Because it destroys character, it destroys initiative. So this legislator that you mentioned, he's right. That when you give people something that they have not earned, other than to help them through the kind of charity that says, you know, we ought not turn the other way when someone is homeless, not by their own choices. And, you know, we're naked and we should clothe and hungry and we should feed and thirsty and we should provide. What I've got, that's all reasonable to do, but not money. You destroy character.
Yeah, right. And, like, I look back, I always think of George Washington Carver when I think about black contributions to society. I look at him, born in 1864 at the tail end of the Civil War,
right.
Lived in 1943, the middle of World War II. And the nature of black culture from the time of the end of the Civil War into the early 20th century, you know, through World War I, through the Depression, black culture reached its apex during that time period. You know, it's been since, I mean, black culture since the advent of these, you know, social safety net entitlement programs and the advocacy of government has declined.
Let's be fair to put it all in context. In reality, Muslims facilitated the slave trade in northwestern Africa. And the African tribes there, which were vicious to one another, who had engaged in the slave trade for a very long time, fell out of love with it and decided, you know, we have enough, more slaves than we can use. And they just started killing the victims of their raids. But Muslims became very active in Northwest Africa, and they established monetarized the violence Africans upon Africans. And they initiated a slave trade that many European nations, the Dutch in particular, the British in particular, facilitated and participated in. And lots of Africans were brought here as slaves, and they were horribly mistreated. And horribly mistreated by the founding fathers of this country. You know, George Washington had slaves. Thomas Jefferson had slaves. That he had offspring with one of his slaves. That's rape. I mean, disgusting what happened. And I can tell you that Lincoln was counterproductive in all of this. He was amongst America's worst racists. So we have completely lied about the Civil War and about Lincoln, about the process of ultimately ending slavery in America. But
right.
It was ended.
I'm talking about black culture as it relates to, like, the family and community.
Right.
In the
what I wanted to say is that after slavery ended, we did not do right by the former slaves in terms of integrating them into society, and particularly in the South, there was great racism and great prejudice. And the ideas of separate bathrooms and separate pools and separate hotels is an abomination.
Yes.
And thank God that we had the civil rights movement that eliminated this. And you know what the worst offender was? The U.S. military.
Okay. Oh, yeah, please, just a second. I'm trying to emphasize here is you're doing the common matter. What I'm trying to say is Black culture and the family was burgeoning, even in spite of all that things in the background.
Yes.
When you look at guys like George Washington Carver, the advent of this, up until like the Tuskegee Airmen, the establishment of Howard University, Morehouse College, things like that. Blacks had a vibrant culture and they had family life. So before this, the entitlement, they were duped into the entitlement programs. They were establishing their own community, their own cultures, their own educational situation. And it was, apart from the standard historical narrative, they were there.
Bleeding heart whites whacked it apart when they said, that's just not going to be acceptable. You having to work that hard to overcome, we're going to give you all of these advantages and entitlements. And they destroyed what the African-American community was establishing through their families. We destroyed it.
Right, exactly. I mean, we're talking establishment of, institutions of higher education and stuff.
Right.
And that was all there. And, black men flying airplanes. Imagine that,
Tuskegee Airmen is one of the great examples. But there are so many others that are just great examples of young men doing the right thing and against all odds. And that is how character is honed. That's the result of having desire, of wanting to achieve. But the dependency culture kills that. So the President of the United States is wrong when he says that the Islamic State is not Islamic. When he says that the jihadists have perverted a great religion. He's wrong in saying that there's a justice gap in America. He's wrong in referencing the events in Ferguson, Missouri, and claiming that that's a sign that America has a racial problem. America does have a crime problem. Make no mistake about it. America incarcerates a higher percentage of its population than any other nation in the world. And that crime in this country is disproportionately to the rate, particularly of violent crimes, rapes, murders, assaults, and armed robberies are perpetrated vastly more frequently by blacks than they are by whites. Blacks are on average 400 to 500% more likely to commit those crimes than are whites. That's frightening. That's the reason that the stereotype exists. That's the reason that somebody in the Justice Department would, on average, consider a black individual to be more likely to be a suspect than a white individual because they're perpetrating 500% more crime than these violent crimes. Just reality. If you don't like the stereotype, change the reality. If you don't like the fact that blacks are killing blacks at an alarming rate, then look at what we have done as a society that has created this culture, this environment, this result. Look at the cause and the consequence. Don't try to change reality. It's the same thing with Islam. Look at the cause and the consequence. Don't try to change reality with your opinions. We go backwards in understanding. We get further from understanding. We grow more distant from wisdom when we have individuals like the President of the United States who speaks out dishonestly such a high percentage of the time, speaking of bad decisions. Reuters is reporting that thousands of Philippine and American soldiers began war games on Monday. And this time they decided that they would play their war games in the disputed waters in the South China Sea, testing the readiness of Asian nations to aggravate China. Now, with this man saying, we have to have a new playbook for a new generation. We need to use diplomacy as opposed to the spear and the club. And yet he takes the club and the spear. He pokes it right at the Chinese. What is it about us? Why are we so belligerent? Why are we so aggressive? Why are we so prone to being warlike? Why does America think that it's a peaceful nation when it's constantly provoking war? Nearly 5,000 U.S. and Filipino troops are participating in the 11-day exercise. It's off the western island of Palawan near Spratulis. The joint air and marine exercises called the Philippine Bilateral Exercises, or FIBLEX, will focus on the maritime security and territorial defense operations as China continues to step up its presence and activities off its coast. I thought you'd want to know that the U.S. airstrikes in Syria hit grain silos. We have a humanitarian crisis in Syria, and the United States is bombing grain silos. Great, huh? Our last night of bombing, we murdered civilians. The aircraft may have mistaken the mills and grain storage areas in the northern Syrian towns for an Islamic State base, said the Britain-based Syrian Observatory of Human Rights. But there was no comment from Washington. We bombed grain silos. The night before, we bombed oil refineries. Poverty is so prevalent in that part of the world. And so this environmentalist nation goes off and bombs oil storage and oil refineries. And the next night we bomb grain silos. What's wrong with us?